Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and Merry, Merry Christmas. You may have noticed we were having a little technical difficulty getting connected, and I don't know about you, but it is almost Christmas, and I am feeling the rush, the pressure, and we have just had a lot going on in my family's life over the last week, and so if I could be so bold as to ask you to pray for me, pray for my family, I would appreciate that so much more than you would know. It's just, I do believe that spiritual warfare is real, and I have been feeling it, and this is the most wonderful time of the year, and not because everything goes perfectly. And I am very dedicated to being seeking connection over perfection. And we're having a little bit of technical imperfections today, but that is okay, because that doesn't change the fact that God is on his throne. He is not pacing the floor of heaven, wringing his hands, saying, oh no, what's going to happen next? What can I do? He knows, he sees, he cares. And wherever you are in this Christmas season, I pray that he will meet you where you are. We know that in this Christmas season, God is Emmanuel. He is God with us in this imperfect world, in the midst of messy relationships, messy travel arrangements, messy Christmas plans that have gone awry, the dog that ate the cookies, or maybe something more serious, maybe something harder than that. God sees you, he knows you, he loves you, and he cares infinitely about you. And so today, I just wanted to take a moment just to give you a breath in this Christmas rush and to share some of my favorite Christmas stories with you. I know there are a lot of kids who are off from school, and these are great stories for kids to listen to. So if you're in the car with the kids, maybe even already headed to grandma's house, turn up the radio, and I've got some stories to share with them that I will be reading to you today. And one of the first stories that I want to read to you is a relatively newer story, but I think there are a lot of people who could really relate to this story. I'm going to read to you a book actually by Mike Huckabee, and it's called Can't Wait for Christmas. And as we're looking at Christmas, we know the anticipation of seeing those things that are under the tree and the temptations that come, especially for little ones, maybe those who are still children at heart like me. But here is Mike Huckabee's story. Let's get into it. Christmas was Mike's favorite season. He loved making his wish list, decorating the tree, and eating as many Christmas cookies as he wanted. Mike even had fun trying to be good, but it was hard, especially when his mom and dad put presents for him and his sister under the tree early, 2 whole weeks early. Mom, how would you like it if I gave you an amazing present, but said you couldn't open it for 2 weeks, Mike asked. I think I could handle that, she answered. Well, how about if I made you just sit in front of that amazing present and stare at it every day for 2 weeks? Is that what you would do? Asked his mom. Yes, said his big sister, Pat. He does that every year. It's not healthy. That's right, said Mike eagerly. It's not healthy. You should let me open my presents, and that way I won't make myself sick. Forget it, said Mom. I'm pretty sure you'll survive until Christmas. You know, when you wait for something you really want, it makes it even more special when you finally get it. But Mike wasn't so sure about that. He had been counting down the days until Christmas since July. And at the very top of his wish list was a football, not just any football, a brown leather J.C. Higgins regulation size football. His mom knew it. His dad knew it. His big sister knew it. In fact, anyone who had ever met or even heard of Mike knew it. And now the pressure was starting to get to Mike. Was he going to get the football? He had to. Mike could tell that most of the presents his parents had put under the tree were things like socks and shirts. But there were a few larger packages and one that looked the exact right shape and size to be a football. Mike needed to know. He needed to know now. Luckily, his parents were at work. There was only one solution. Mike ran to his sister's room. "Pat," he said breathlessly, "I need you to help me open a Christmas present." Very calmly, Pat told him he was crazy. "You can't open your presents before Christmas," she said. "That's just wrong. It's like cheating." "But some of them have your name on them, Pat, and they're just sitting there all lonely and bored. Come on, isn't there one special present that you've been dreaming about? Don't you want to know if you're going to get it?" "You're the one who's going to get it," she said. But Mike could tell. She was curious. A few minutes later, brother and sister were in front of the tree. "Now what do we do?" asked Pat. "Let's see," said Mike. "I count 6 presents for you and 6 for me." "Wow," said Pat. "Mom is really fair." "Wait," said Mike. "Do you realize it's only 12 days until Christmas and that we have 12 presents sitting right in front of us? This is fate. This is our destiny. This is the real 12 days of Christmas." "What are you talking about?" said Pat. Of course, Mike was more than happy to explain his plan. Each day, they would open their gifts and play all afternoon. At the end of the day, before their parents got home from work, Pat then would rewrap the presents good as new and put them right back where they had been. "This way," Mike said triumphantly, "Christmas will last 12 days instead of just one. Plus, we can stop bugging Mom and Dad about letting us open stuff early. I know they'll like that." "I guess that makes sense," Pat said. "Of course it does," said Mike. He picked up with a certain package with his name on it, and he said with a sly smile, "Let's open this one first." And I'll tell you what happened right after the break. See you in just a minute.
A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
We were watching with expectation. We were searching.
Welcome back, friends. Christmas is coming. That song is by Kane. And Merry Christmas, friends. I am in the middle of reading to you a story. I thought it would be fun. We have lots of kids off. If you have kids around the radio, this is a great time to turn it up and have them listen to the story that I've been reading with you. I've been reading Mike Huckabee's Can't Wait Till Christmas. And we have left off with Mike desperately wanting a football for Christmas. And so tempted when his parents are gone to open that package before Christmas and see what is in it. And he has talked his sister into doing it. So let's get back to the story. Pat examined the package closely. The wrapping paper is very delicate, she said, shaking her head, and there are only 3 pieces of tape holding it together. This isn't going to be easy. Just open it. Open it. Mike was having a hard time holding himself together. Okay, don't rush me. Pat slid one fingernail between paper and tape. I think I can slide this baby right out to the end, she said. Do whatever you have to do, commanded Mike. Yes, there it was in all its glory. Brown leather, J.C. Higgins, regulation size football. Mike went berserk. He grabbed the ball. I got it, he screamed, leaping around the living room. Hallelujah, touchdown! Calm down, said his sister as she opened one of her presents. You better save some of your energy for Christmas morning. We're going to have to act surprised, delighted, and amazed. It's a deal, shouted Mike as he ran out the door to play football with his friends. It's a deal, said Pat, taking the microscope out of her new chemistry set. On Christmas morning, Pat poked her brother. Remember to act surprised. Mike quickly put on a big grin. Oh, boy, I can't wait to get started, he said to his parents. They were on the sofa, ready for the big show. I just never get tired of seeing our kids so happy on Christmas morning, said Mom with a contented sigh. It's such a great way to start the day, full of joy and excitement. Let me at him, shouted Pat, rubbing her hands together. Wow, thought Mike, she is really good. Mike was starting to have doubts about his own acting abilities, and suddenly he wasn't feeling very joyful. His mom handed him the large package. Is this what I think it is? He squeaked. Look, honey, Dad said to Mom. Mike is so excited. His hands are shaking. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it's a J.C. Higgins football. I'm so surprised. Actually, the only thing that would have surprised Mike at that moment was if the football had leaped up and whacked him on the head. Pat jumped in just in the nick of time. Hey, look at this chemistry set. It says you can do more than 100 experiments. Mom and Dad leaned in for a closer view of the amazing chemistry set. Wait a minute there, said Dad. Let me see that. Pat clutched it to her chest. If her dad got any closer, he would see that half the experiments had already been done. What are you doing, Pat? I just want to see that box. It looks like it's been used. It's fine, snapped Pat. It's perfect. No problems here, Dad. Okay, if you say so, he said. Meanwhile, Mike was trying to wipe the mud off his football. What are you doing there, Mikey? Asked Mom. I'm buffing the leather. That's what the pros do. Good for you, she said. Hey, you know what we're missing? Christmas music. She jumped up, turned on the radio, and began to dance and sing. On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me, she warbled. Mike was feeling worse and worse. He wondered how his mom would feel if she knew about his version of the 12 days of Christmas, probably not very good. Before Mike could think about it anymore, his dad picked up his football. I remember when I got my first, he began. Then he stopped. He stared at the football. He rubbed his fingers across the leather and they came away dirty. That's strange, said Dad. What are you talking about, said Mom. Dad tossed the football to his wife. I present to you Exhibit A, a muddy football. And over by Pat, Exhibit B, a dirty beaker. Kids, why don't you tell us what's going on here? Mike put his head in his hands. In a very small voice, he said, I couldn't wait till Christmas to find out if I was going to get the football. And when I had found the package under the tree, I had to open it. I asked Pat to help me. Then we went crazy. We opened all your gifts. We thought it would be fun. And was it as much fun as you thought it would be? Asked his mom. Well, yes, at first, said Mike, but now I feel really sad. Me too, said Pat. I really hate waiting for presents, said Mike, but I think I hate the way I feel right now even more. I ruined Christmas morning, and I'm really sorry. Mike sniffled a bit. He waited for his parents to tell him what his punishment would be. He wished he could go back and tell his past self to just be patient. Well, you did ruin Christmas for yourselves, and I guess that's a pretty big punishment all on its own, said Dad. I know it's hard to do, but you need to remember that Christmas isn't just about presents. It's a time for us to celebrate together. And if you do something sneaky, like open presents ahead of time, that means the real joy in Christmas will disappear. Can you promise to remember that? Yes, Dad, said the two children. Mike and his sister kept their promise. And when Christmas rolled around, they opened their presents, and they were surprised and delighted and amazed, and everyone could tell they weren't faking. I think everyone has been in the position where you want to know that Christmas gift, or you do that thing you think that you shouldn't, but, you know, our sin always finds us out. It's always obvious. It is never, ever worth the price. And I hope that story is encouraging for anxious kids, or maybe kids at heart who want to open their presents early. But there is so much more joy in giving than in getting, and giving gifts than in receiving gifts. So I hope that you all will be patient. I may or may not have done that once when I was a little girl, and my mother may or may not have taken that gift right back to the store, which may or may not have been the exact right thing to do. Well, the second story that I want to read to you is a classic, and some of you will love this. I got a lot of feedback from the last story saying that it was a nice change of pace and they were sentimental. So here we go. I'm going to read to you Peanuts, A Charlie Brown Christmas. This is a great story about the real meaning of Christmas. So let's go. Snowflakes floated in the crisp, pine-scented air. The wind carried the joyful sounds of jingling bells, Christmas carols, and people wishing one another happy holidays. The greatest time of the year was finally here. Whipping across a frozen pond, the Peanuts gang was happy as, well, children at Christmas time, all except good old Charlie Brown. I think there's something wrong with me, Charlie Brown told Linus. I just don't understand Christmas. I like getting presents, sending cards, decorating trees, and all that. But I always end up feeling sad. Linus sighed. You're the only person I know who could turn a wonderful season like Christmas into a problem. Maybe Lucy's right. Of all the Charlie Browns in the world, you are the Charlie Browniest. Charlie Brown felt even sadder when he opened his empty mailbox. Rats! Nobody sent me a Christmas card today. I know nobody likes me, but why does the holiday season have to rub it in? Charlie Brown felt depressed, so he decided to see his psychiatrist, Lucy. He dropped a nickel in her can and sighed. I just don't understand Christmas. Instead of feeling happy, I feel sort of let down. You need to get involved, Lucy exclaimed. She knew just how to get her patient into the Christmas spirit. How would you like to direct our Christmas play? I'll meet you at the theater. Charlie Brown decided to give it a try. After all, things couldn't get much worse. On his way to the theater, Charlie Brown passed his dog. Snoopy was decorating his doghouse with heaps of shiny ornaments. What's going on here? Charlie Brown asked. Snoopy showed him a flyer. Find the true meaning of Christmas when money, money, money. Enter the Christmas lights and display contest. My own dog has gone commercial, Charlie Brown wailed. I can't stand it. He was sick of all the greedy buying and selling that had become Christmas. Helping his little sister, Sally, write a letter to Santa only made Charlie Brown feel worse. I have been extra good this year, so enclosed is an extra long list of things I want, Sally began. Good grief. Charlie Brown's stomach hurt. What had happened to giving and sharing? Or perhaps you should just send money, Sally concluded. I would prefer tens or twenties. But Charlie Brown did not have time to lecture Sally about the meaning of Christmas. He had a show to direct. He hurried to the theater. Let's get down to work, Charlie Brown told the cast. It's the spirit of the actors that counts, the interest they show in their director. Am I right? I said, am I right? But nobody was listening. They were all dancing to Schroeder's bouncy piano music. Stop the music, Charlie Brown shouted. Then he told Lucy to hand out the scripts and costumes. Do innkeepers' wives have naturally curly hair? Frida wondered. Pigpen promised to keep a clean inn. Sherman complained, every year I play a shepherd. Snoopy agreed to be all the animals, even some that weren't in the play. Lucy came up with 5 good reasons for Linus to learn his lines and get rid of that stupid blanket. But Linus found a way to keep his blanket in the show. The rehearsal went about as well as one of Charlie Brown's baseball games. Frida worried that Pigpen's dust was ruining her curls. Lucy called for a lunch break. Linus hid under his blanket. And instead of listening to their director, everyone danced to Schroeder's jazz. Frustrated, Charlie Brown finally called out, "That does it!" Lucy stopped snapping her fingers and asked, "What's the matter, Charlie Brown?" "This Christmas play is all wrong," he wailed. Lucy tried to calm him. "Let's face it, we all know Christmas is just a racket set up to make people buy lots of stuff they don't need." Charlie Brown shook his head. "This is one play that won't be like that. We need the proper mood. What we need is a Christmas tree." "That's it, Charlie Brown. We need a great, big, shiny aluminum tree," Lucy exclaimed. "You get the tree. I'll handle this crowd," she said, taking charge of bossing everyone around. "I'll take Linus with me," Charlie Brown said. "The rest of you can practice your lines. Get the biggest aluminum tree you can find. Maybe painted pink," Lucy added. Charlie Brown felt a familiar knot in his stomach. "I don't know, Linus. I just don't know," he said, sighing as the two boys walked to the Christmas tree lot. Soon they were surrounded by a fantastic forest of fake trees. Some were plastic or pink or even polka dotted. "Gee, do they still make wooden Christmas trees?" Linus wondered aloud. Then Charlie Brown pointed to a tiny tree, barely strong enough to hold onto its needles. He said, "This little one seems to need a home." Linus worried about what Lucy would think, but Charlie Brown bought the tiny tree anyway. "What kind of tree is that?" they shrieked when the boys got back to the theater with a scrawny tree. "You were supposed to get a good tree." "You're hopeless, Charlie Brown, completely hopeless," Violet scolded. Everyone laughed at the skinny tree, even Snoopy. Charlie Brown's heart sank. "I guess you were right, Linus. I shouldn't have picked this little tree. I guess I really don't know what Christmas is about," he wailed. "Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?" "Sure, Charlie Brown. I can tell you what Christmas is about." Linus stepped into the spotlight and said, "And there were shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And the angel of the Lord came upon them and said, 'Fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy. For unto you is born this day a Savior, which is Christ the Lord.' And there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts praising God and saying, 'Glory to God, peace on earth, goodwill to men.'" That is what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown. Suddenly, Charlie Brown didn't care what anyone thought of him or his tree. He finally felt happy, the way he was supposed to feel at Christmas. Charlie Brown stepped out into the cold, silent night and looked up at the twinkling stars. "Linus is right. I won't let all this greed spoil my Christmas. I'll decorate this little tree and show everyone it really will work in our play." Charlie Brown took a bright red ball off Snoopy's prize-winning doghouse and he hung the ball on the tiny tree. And the tree slowly bent over until its top hit the ground. That was all it took to spoil Charlie Brown's mood. "Arg, I killed it. Everything I touched is ruined." And he walked away with his shoulders bent. After Charlie Brown had left, the others found the tree. "It's not a bad little tree, really," Linus said. He wrapped his blanket around its face. "Just needs a little love." The rest of the gang helped, and in a flash, Snoopy's doghouse decorations had transformed the tree. The children gathered around the pretty little tree and hummed "O Little Town of Bethlehem." They could almost see the shepherds guarding their flocks by night, and when Charlie Brown returned to the group, he could hardly believe his eyes. How had the tree become so beautiful? And he realized what everyone had done for this tree. It was a Christmas miracle. Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown. When we come back, I'll talk about the importance of reading to your kids and what it can do for your relationship this Christmas. See you on the other side of this break with more Christmas music and more Christmas stories.
Here's Dr. Ligon Duncan from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
I think the most striking thing to me about the Bible is that it not only reveals God to me, it is God speaking to us, revealing Himself to us. But in the process of teaching us about Himself, He reveals so much about who we are. I often tell people that one of the ways that I know that the Bible is true is the way that it diagnoses my sin. I'm often reading through a passage and I'm thinking, this was written 3,000 years ago, and yet it perfectly diagnoses the state of the sin of my heart. The only way that can happen is if my Creator is actually the author of the book.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till He appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn.
Welcome back, friends. That song is one of the greatest Christmas songs ever written, in my opinion. Oh, Holy Night. And that particular version is by Crowder and Passion. And Merry Christmas to all of you. I hope that you will have a very Merry Christmas starting tomorrow on Christmas Eve. And the best way to make your night holy here on earth is to go to church somewhere. And I pray that tomorrow you will find a church that you can wander into and that you can sit, hopefully by candlelight, listening to the story of Christmas, the real story of Christmas, where we get our hope from, and that you will sit with other people in their brokenness, in their imperfections, in this world that is so far from what we want it to be. But in that moment, God will come near to you. The scripture tells us that if we draw near to God, He will draw near to us. And I'm praying that you will draw near to God this Christmas and that you will draw near to your family. Now, one of the best ways to do that is actually reading out loud to your kids. Now, I don't care if they're 3 weeks old, 3 months old, 3 years old, 13, 30, or 80. Whatever age, this is a great way to strengthen family bonds. It really helps enhance your child's emotional connection with you. It spurs their intellectual growth. It makes a tradition. So incorporating Christmas stories into your family traditions, it gives kids a sense of belonging. It gives them a sense of comfort. It helps to teach moral lessons about giving and kindness and joy. It encourages imagination and creativity. It enhances their language and literacy skills. It teaches them values and lessons. And it's very calming and soothing. And who doesn't need stress relief, a moment to pause and reflect among holiday busyness? So if you're looking for a book to read out loud at Christmas, choose an engaging, age-appropriate book with lots of great pictures, meaningful messages. Create a festive holiday setting. And maybe if you're a grandparent or another relative, bring a book with you, because if you see a harried parent trying to get all of their packages in or trying to get their dish on the table or take care of other kids and their kid is using a screen, offer to read them a book. It gives a physical connection as you sit side by side and you turn the pages together. So I really encourage you to read to your kids, find kids at your Christmas family gathering and just read to them. Or even if it's you and your spouse at home, read aloud to each other. It might feel a little awkward at first, but there's something magical about sharing a story with our imagination. I've read to you the Can't Wait Till Christmas by Mike Huckabee and A Charlie Brown Christmas by Charles M. Schulz. And right now, the last story I'll share with you today is a classic, The Gift of the Magi by O. Henry. $1.87, that was all. And 60 cents of it was in pennies. Pennies saved one and two at a time by bulldozing the grocer and the vegetable man and the butcher until one's cheeks burned with the silent imputation of parsimony that such close dealing implied. Three times Della counted it, $1.87, and the next day would be Christmas. There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and howl, so Della did it, which instigates the moral reflection that life is made up of sobs, sniffles, and smiles, with sniffles predominating. While the mistress of the home is gradually subsiding from the first stage to the second, take a look at the home. A furnished flat at $8 per week. It did not exactly beggar description, but it certainly had that word on the lookout for the squad. In the vestibule below was a letterbox into which no letter would go, and an electric button from which no mortal finger could coax a ring. Also appertaining thereunto was a card bearing the name Mr. James Dillingham Young. The Dillingham had been flung to the breeze during a former period of prosperity when its possessor was being paid $30 per week. Now when the income was shrunk to $20, the letters of Dillingham looked blurred, as though they were thinking seriously of contracting to a modest and unassuming D. But whenever Mr. James Dillingham Young came home and reached his flat above, he was called Jim and greatly hugged by Mrs. James Dillingham Young, already introduced to you as Della, which is all very good. Della finished her cry and attended to her cheeks with the powder rag. She stood by the window and looked out dully at a gray cat walking a gray fence in a gray backyard. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she only had $1.87 with which to buy Jim a present. She had been saving every penny she could for months with this result. $20 a week doesn't go far. Expenses have been greater than she had calculated. They always were. Only $1.87 to buy a present for Jim. Her Jim. Many a happy hour she had spent planning for something nice for him, something fine and rare and sterling, something just a little bit near to being worthy of the honor of being owned by Jim. There was a pier glass between the windows of the room. Perhaps you have seen a pier glass in an $8 flat. A very thin and agile person may, by observing his reflection in a rapid sequence of longitudinal steps, obtain a fairly accurate conception of his looks. Della, being slender, had mastered the art. Suddenly, she whirled from the window and stood before the glass. Her eyes were shining brilliantly, but her face had lost its color within 20 seconds, and rapidly she pulled her hair down to let it fall to its full length. Now, there were two possessions of the James Dillingham Youngs in which they both took a mighty pride. One was Jim's gold watch that had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair. Had the Queen of Sheba lived in the flat across the air shaft, Della would have let her hair hang out the window someday to dry, just to depreciate Her Majesty's jewels and gifts. Had King Solomon been the janitor with all his treasures piled up in the basement, Jim would have pulled out his watch every time he passed just to see him pluck at his beard from envy. So now, Della's beautiful hair fell about her, rippling and shining like a cascade of brown waters. It reached below her knee and made itself almost a garment for her. And then she did it up again nervously and quickly. Once she faltered for a minute and stood still while a tear or two splashed on the worn red carpet. On went her old brown jacket, on went her old brown hat, and with a whirl of skirts and with a brilliant sparkle still in her eyes, she fluttered out the door and down the stairs to the street. Where she stopped, the sign read, "Madame Sofroni, hair goods of all kinds," and one flight up, Della ran and collected herself, panting. "Madam, will you buy my hair?" asked Della. "I buy hair," said Madam. "Take your hat off, and let's have a sight at the looks of it." Della rippled the brown cascade. $20, said Madam, lifting the mass with practiced hand. "Give it to me quick," said Della. Oh, in the next 2 hours, tripped on by rosy wings, forget the hashed metaphor. She was ransacking the stores for Jim's present, and she found it at last. It surely had been made for Jim and no one else. There was no other like it in any of the stores, and she had turned all of them inside out. It was a platinum fob chain, simple and chaste in design, properly proclaiming its value by substance alone and not by meretricious ornamentation, as all good things should do. It was even worthy of the watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew that it must be Jim's. It was like him, quietness and value. The description applied to both. $21 they took from her for it, and she hurried home with the 87 cents. With that chain on his watch, Jim might be properly anxious about the time in any company. Grand as the watch was, he sometimes looked at it on the sly on account of the old leather strap that he used in place of a chain. When Della reached home, her intoxication gave way to a little prudence and reason. She got out her curling irons and lighted the gas and went to work repairing the ravages made by generosity added to love, which is always a tremendous task, dear friends, a mammoth task. Within 40 minutes, her head was covered with tiny close-lying curls that made her look wonderfully like a truant schoolboy. She looked at her reflection in the mirror long, carefully, and critically. "If Jim doesn't kill me," she said to herself, "before he takes a second look at me, he'll say I look like a Coney Island chorus girl. But what could I do? What could I do with $1.87? At 7 o'clock, the coffee was made and the frying pan was on the back of the stove hot and ready to cook the chops. Jim was never late. Della doubled the fob chain in her hand and sat on the corner of the table near the door that he always entered. And then she heard his step on the stair way down on the first flight, and she turned white for just a moment. She had a habit of saying little silent prayers about the simplest everyday things, and now she whispered, "Please, God, make him think I'm still pretty." The door opened, and Jim stepped in and closed it. He looked thin and very serious. Poor fellow, he was only 22, and to be burdened with a family, he needed a new overcoat, and he was without gloves. Jim stopped inside the door, as immovable as a setter at the scent of a quail. His eyes were fixed upon Della, and there was an expression in them that she could not read, and it terrified her. It was not anger, nor surprise, nor disapproval, nor horror, nor any of the sentiments that she had been prepared for. He simply stared at her fixedly with that peculiar expression on his face. Della wriggled off the table and went for him. "Jim, darling," she cried, "don't look at me that way. I had my hair cut and sold it because I couldn't have lived through Christmas without giving you a present. It'll grow out again. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows awfully fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim, and let's be happy. You don't know what a beautiful, nice gift I've got for you." "You've cut off your hair?" asked Jim laboriously, as if he had not arrived at that patent fact. "Yet even after the hardest mental labor, cut it and sold it," said Della. "Don't you like me just as well anyhow? I'm me without my hair, ain't I?" Jim looked about the room curiously. You say your hair is gone," he said with an air almost of idiocy. You needn't look for it, said Della. It's sold, I tell you. Sold and gone, too. It's Christmas Eve. Be good to me, for it went for you. Maybe the hairs of my head were numbered, she went on with sudden serious sweetness. But nobody could ever count my love for you. Shall I put the chops on, Jim? Out of his trance, Jim seemed quickly to awake. He enfolded his Della. For 10 seconds, let us regard with discreet scrutiny some inconsequential object in the other direction. $8 a week or $1 million a year, what is the difference? A mathematician or a wit would give you the wrong answer. The Magi brought valuable gifts, but that was not among them. This dark assertion will be illuminated later on. Jim drew a package from his overcoat pocket and threw it upon the table. Don't make any mistake, Del, he said, about me. I don't think there's anything in the way of a haircut or a shave or a shampoo that can make me like my girl any less. But if you unwrap the package, you'll see what had me going. And there lay the combs, the set of combs side and back that Della had worshipped for a long in the Broadway window. Beautiful combs, pure tortoise shell with jeweled rims, just the shade to wear in the beautiful vanished hair. She looked at Jim and said, my hair grows so fast, Jim. And then Della leaped up like a little singed cat and cried, oh, Jim had not yet seen his beautiful present. She held it out to him eagerly upon her open palm. The dull, precious metal seemed to flash with a reflection of her bright and ardent spirit. Isn't it a dandy, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. Give me your watch. I want to see how it looks on it. But instead of obeying, Jim tumbled down on the couch and put his hands under the back of his head and smiled. Del, he said, let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. They're too nice to use just at present. I sold the watch to get the money to buy your combs. Now suppose you put the chops on. The Magi, as you know, were wise men, wonderfully wise men, who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, these gifts were no doubt wise ones, possibly bearing the privilege of exchange in case of duplication. And here I have lamely related to you uneventful chronicle of two foolish children in a flat who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that all who gave these gifts, these two were the wisest. Of all who gave and give and receive gifts, such as they are the wisest. Everywhere, they are the wisest. They are the Magi.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.